I had to spend part of my early morning dealing with the insurance company, medical insurance. So I had to print out 10 forms and sign 8 times. And anyway, while I was waiting for all that to happen, it happened that an email came in describing a war of words going on in the United States about who should be given help and who shouldn't, or who has first priority on aid. I don't know if it was about aid or about the immigration controversy. I'm not sure what it was about. But one of the officials said charity begins at home, and then another one responded by mentioning the parable of the Good Samaritan, who took care of someone who wasn't from his home. So this is the debate, and this is probably an endless debate. How do you decide whom to help? I mean, we do this ourselves when we're doing the ayuda distribution. Well, how do you decide whom to help? Because there's more people around than you can help. And if you have 300 bags of rice, well, you can only help 300 families, and that's it. Okay, so now that debate was in my mind when I went back, finally got back to the scriptures, and we have Jesus helping two people in desperate need, the daughter of Jairus and the woman who's been afflicted with hemorrhages for 12 years. Now, when it comes to human aid and this question of charity begins at home and this sort of thing, of course, part of the reason why it's difficult for us is because we have limited resources and we can't help everybody all the time. So it's right, we start with our own loved ones, our own families, our own neighborhood and communities. We don't automatically start by, you know, sending money to North Korea or someplace. So that's right principle. But on the other hand, there's nobody who's completely excluded from our love. But when it comes to God, those criteria don't seem to work, because God can, he doesn't have limited resources. He can help everybody. So how does he decide whom to help? And this draws us into a mystery, part of which we just cannot understand, and part of which we must come to understand. So the part we can't understand is why God does things the way he does. I mean, if he has the power to help everybody, why doesn't he just do it? And when he does help people, why does he help some and not others? So that part we cannot know very much about in this life. And a lot of people complain about that. You can imagine the experience of Jairus. His daughter is sick. She's getting sicker and sicker. She's on the point of death. And he seeks out Jesus. Well, Jesus just arrived from across the sea, the Gerasene territory, the pagan territory, came back into near Capernaum. And Jairus gets an opportunity to approach him and ask and beg for his help. Lay your hands on her. Come, lay your hands on her, that she may get well and live. You see the faith that Jairus has, that Jesus touching his daughter will be enough to heal her. But the modern objection to that is, well, why did God allow her to get sick in the first place if God loved her? Why did he allow her to get sick? And then Jesus, who had the power to heal from a distance, as he did many times, and he could have said, okay, Jairus, yes, I accept your request, she's healed. He could have done it right there, but instead he goes with Jairus on the way to the house, and the girl dies. So there's a mystery here. Why did Jesus allow the girl to die? Why didn't he heal her? Now, I said there's the part that we don't understand, and then there's the part that we must understand. The part we don't understand, we don't know why he does certain things. But remember, Jesus does refer to this once in a while in trying to reveal why he does things the way he does. Remember when Lazarus died and Jesus got the report that Lazarus was very sick, and he didn't go and heal him, and he didn't heal him from a distance? And then they got the report that Lazarus died. And then Jesus said, our friend has fallen asleep. Now I will go to awaken him. you know that passage. Our friend has fallen asleep. Now I will go to awaken him. I thought that story came to my mind because when the girl died, Jesus said, she's not dead, she's asleep. And everybody knew she was dead, so they ridiculed him for saying that. Well, God doesn't see death the way we see death. That's what we learned from that. And in the case of Lazarus, he was really dead. And his companions said, well, if he's asleep, well, then he can be saved. And Jesus had to say, no, he's dead. He's dead. So, but why did he allow him to die? And it's because it allows us to recognize the power of God at work. When something goes wrong and it gets fixed, or there's a restoration or a healing, but then we realize, look what God can do. And we need signs like that. So that part, hard for us. But the part that we must understand is our part, that is faith. Faith. Why doesn't God help everybody all the time? We don't know why. But we do know if we want Him to help us or help those whom we love, we must trust in Him. We must open the door for Him to act. And that's what's on display in this gospel, not only with the case of Jairus. We don't know what the little girl, the 12-year-old girl, what she believes. She may never even know anything about Jesus. But until she rose from the dead, she met Him face to face. But Jairus is the one with the faith, right? And whose faith is put to the test. And the other case is the story of the woman bleeding for 12 years, who also reaches out to Jesus with faith. And there's a large crowd of people. So in that large crowd, and it mentions the crowd several times in this long gospel, the two people that get the benefit of Jesus' divine power are two people with faith. And that's the lesson to us. There are a lot of people there. Why didn't He help them all? I don't know why. But what we do know is that the two people that He helped were those who had faith. We know that it can happen that a person with extraordinary faith cries out to God and doesn't get what he asks for. I mean, St. Paul himself said he begged the Lord three times to take away some kind of an affliction. It didn't happen. It doesn't mean that Paul didn't have faith. It means faith is submission to God. It's not ordering God what to do. So gospel is quite profound, partly because of the two healings, but partly because they're put together in a kind of sandwich. This is the Marx style. He likes to do this sandwich method. So he begins one story, then inserts another story, then finishes the first story. And it's to the credit of the church that the liturgy keeps the whole thing together, keeps the whole sandwich together. Because you can imagine the liturgists or whoever sets up the readings could have said, well, today we're going to do the story of Jairus' daughter being healed, and then tomorrow we'll do the story of the woman with the hemorrhage, and it could have been dealt separately, but no, we read them together because they both reinforce this lesson about faith. I mentioned Jairus. After his daughter dies, and he gets the report, your daughter is dead. Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any longer? We don't know what Jairus thought at the time. Jesus intervenes right there and says, do not be afraid. Just have faith. So the attack on Jairus' faith, first of all, it's too late. But also that you're going to trouble the teacher. That you're cry and your grief and your need is somehow bothering Jesus. That's also an attack on faith. If you think, I won't trouble the Lord, or I'm not worthy of getting anything from Him, so I just won't pray anymore. That's all attacks on faith. And Jesus doesn't allow those attacks to stop Him. Do not be afraid. Just have faith. Just have faith. Easy to say, but hard to do when the contradiction is right in our face. This is how faith grows, right? Faith doesn't grow if everything's working out all the time. Faith grows when things are going wrong and we say, Lord, help me. And when he doesn't help us, we say it again, Lord, help me. That's how faith grows. So even though we don't know why God allows us to experience contradictions, one of the fruits of the contradictions is that we grow. The woman with the hemorrhage, 12 years, very long time. And not only was that a physical affliction, it was also a social, religious affliction. She was unclean in the Jewish system. Blood rendered a person unclean. So she was always unclean. She could never go into the synagogue. She could never join the community for worship. In fact, she wasn't even supposed to be in the crowd, and she certainly wasn't supposed to touch anybody. Because touching for an unclean person to touch someone else renders them unclean. So the whole thing is just an impossible burden. No one can help her. She's run out of money. But she does have faith. And she believes that if she touches his cloak, she'll be healed. And it happens. It's a beautiful story because you see the opening that faith provides. The woman doesn't understand how it works. And Jesus, in his humanity, didn't even understand it. Who did that? Who did that? Of course, he knew who it was in his divine mind. He knows. But in his humanity, he experienced the limitation where somebody in this crowd has faith and has touched me. And a lot of other people touched me without faith. The whole crowd of people are touching him, as the apostles object. But one person touched him with faith. Now, we're supposed to learn from this woman. We are the people, maybe we don't have much leading, but there's something draining our life, something dragging us down. Our circumstances, maybe a financial situation, health problems, sin condition, recurring temptations, whatever they are, something's draining us, and the temptation is to just give up. So we're like, and what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to touch Jesus. And well, we might say, well, we do touch him. We touch him every day, especially those who are daily mass goers. We're always touching him. Or every time we pray, we touch him. Certainly, whenever we receive Holy Communion, we touch him. He touches us. Why don't these experiences of being drained immediately dry up? Is it because we don't have faith? Maybe. I say, there's two parts to this. God's part, which we don't understand. Why he heals some people and not other people. But our part, we should understand, that is, have faith. Just have faith. Jesus says it. Just have faith. And when the woman is healed, what does he say to her? Your faith has saved you. Huh? Your faith saved you. I always love those lines because Jesus is the one who healed her. She didn't heal herself. Jesus healed her. But he healed her because she touched him with faith. There was an opportunity to reveal himself, reveal his power, his love, his goodness, his personal attention to a person suffering. That's what was revealed. Okay, two great, great examples of faith. Now, let's connect this to the first reading where it says we're surrounded by people with faith. We're surrounded by what we call the communion of saints, right? This cloud, this great cloud of witnesses. Now, when the letter to the Hebrews was written, the author was thinking about the Old Testament heroes of faith. But we who are in the New Covenant know that we're surrounded by people in heaven and also on earth who have faith. It's a great support to us. This Jairus is one of them. Now, his witness helps us. The woman, we don't know her name, but we know that she experienced healing. She's a part of this communion that helps us. But notice what the letter says. We're surrounded, yes. But our focus isn't on the saints. And though they help us. They're with us on the journey. But let us rid ourselves of every burden and sin that clings to us and persevere in running the race So we're running a race. We're not looking at who's running with us all the time. It's great to have people to run with. Anyone in a community knows this, or anyone in a faith community or family of faith knows how helpful it is to have someone to run with. Okay, run the race that lies before us while keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the leader and perfecter of faith. There's the word faith again. So how does faith work? It helps us keep our eyes fixed on Jesus as we run along, or stumble along, as we strive to make progress. Yes, we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, the leader and perfecter of faith. Why we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus? Because he's the one who has the power. He's the one who is the foundation of our hope. If we stop looking at him, and we just look at ourselves, or even if we just look at the cloud of witnesses, it won't be enough for us. There's always going to be a limitation. Back to where I started, human resources are always limited. So I have to decide who to help, who not to help. God is not limited. That's why we keep our eyes fixed on him, the unlimited, infinite mercy of God. With that confidence, we persevere. The letter says we haven't resisted sin or persecution to the point of shedding blood. I'm talking about a hemorrhage. We're not bleeding because of persecution. So we don't have any excuse not to persevere in running the race. And the key to perseverance is keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus.